stop on Morelli's polished wood floor and slammed into Morelli. This was Bob's usual opening act, and Morelli had been braced for the hit. Bob was a big, goofy, orange-haired beast who ate everything that wasn't nailed down and had more enthusiasm than brains. He shoved past us and bounced out the door in a rush to tinkle on Morelli's minuscule front yard. This was always Bob's first choice of bathroom, and as a result, the grass was scorched brown. Bob returned to the house, Morelli closed and locked the front door, and we stood there for a moment, sucking in the silence. "This wasn't one of my better days," I said to Morelli. "My car was destroyed, I was involved in a shooting, and I just sat through the dinner from hell." Morelli slung an arm around me.
"Dinner wasn't that bad."
"My sister talked cuddle umpkins to clown for 2 hours. My mother and grandmother cried every time someone mentioned the wedding. Mary Alice whinnied nonstop, and the baby threw up on you."
"Yeah, but aside from that..."
"Not to mention, Grandma got completely snookered and passed out at the table."
"She was a smart one,"
Morelli said. "You were the hero."
"I wouldn't actually have shot him," Morelli said. "Not to kill, anyway."
"My family is a disaster."
Morelli grinned. "I've called you Cupcake for as long as I can remember, but I'm rethinking it after listening to the 2 hours of Cuddlumpkins."
"Just exactly what is a human-type cupcake?"
"It's like a cream puff, but not as squishy. It's dessert. It's soft and sweet, and it's good to eat."
The eating part gave me a rush that went straight to my doodah. Morelli kissed me just below my earlobe and told me a few things about the right way to eat a cupcake. When he got to the part about licking the icing off the top, my nipples shrunk to the size and hardness of steel ball bearings. "Boy, I'm really tired," I said. "Maybe we should be thinking about going to bed."
"Good idea, cupcake."
I've been living with Morelli for several months now, and it's been surprisingly easy. We still like each other, and the magic hasn't gone out of the sex. Hard to imagine it ever would with Morelli. He's nice to my hamster, Rex. He doesn't expect me to make him breakfast. He's neat without being freaky about it. And he remembers to close the lid on the toilet, most of the time. What more can you ask from a man? Morelli lives on a quiet street in a small, pleasant house he inherited from his Aunt Rose. The house mirrors my parents' house and every other house on Morelli Street. When I look out his bedroom window, I see neatly parked cars and 2-story red-brick attached townhouses with clean windows. There are small trees and small shrubs in small yards. And behind the front doors are frequently large people. Food is good in Trenton. The bedroom window in my apartment looks out at a blacktop parking lot. The apartment building was constructed in the 70s and is totally lacking in charm and amenities. My interior decorating style is one step away from college dorm. Decorating takes time and money, and I have neither. So it's a mystery why I would miss my apartment. But the truth is, sometimes I felt homesick for the depressing mustard and olive green bathroom, the hook in the entrance area where I hang my jacket, the cooking smells and television noise from the neighboring apartments. It was 9 in the morning and Morelli was off, ridding the city of bad guys, protecting the populace. I rinsed my coffee cup and set it in the dish drain. I tapped on Rex's cage and told him I'd be back. I hugged Bob and told him to be good and not eat any chairs. After I hugged Bob, I had to use the lint roller on my jeans. I was rollering my jeans when the doorbell bonged.
"Howdy," Grandma Mazur said when I answered the door. "I was out for a walk and I was in the neighborhood, so I thought I'd stop by for a cup of coffee."
"That's a long walk."
"Your sister came over first thing with her laundry and the house got real crowded."
"I was just going out," I told Grandma. "I have some people to pick up this morning."
"I could help. I could be your assistant. I'd be good at it. I can be real scary when I try."
I grabbed my shoulder bag and denim jacket. "I don't actually need anybody scary, but you can ride along if you want. My plan is to stop at the office to say hello, and then I'm going to get Sally so he can reschedule." Grandma followed me out the front door to the curb.
"This sure is a pip of a car," Grandma said, taking the Buick in. "I feel like one of them old-time gangsters when I ride in this car." I feel poor when I ride in the car, since I'm the one buying the gas. No car in the history of the world guzzled gas better than the Buick. Lula was at the door when I parked in front of the bond's office.
Don't bother trying to get that boat docked just right, she said. We got an emergency call. Remember the chip lady? Well, she's having some kind of a breakdown. Connie just got off the phone with the chip lady's sister, and Connie said we should go over there and see what's happening.
Sometimes part of my job falls under the category of preventive care. If you know something's going wrong in a Bondi's life, it's best to check in with him from time to time rather than wait for him to flee.
Hello, Lula said, peeking in the car window. We got Grandma on board.
I'm helping Stephanie this morning, Grandma said. What's a chip lady?
It's some woman held up a Frito-Lay truck, Lula said, and then she ate the chips.
Good for her, Grandma said. I've always wanted to do that.
Lula climbed into the back seat.
Me too. You read those adult magazines and they're always talking about sex fantasies, but I say chip fantasies are where it's at.
I wouldn't mind combining them, Grandma said. Suppose you had some good-looking naked man feeding you the chips.
No way, Lula said. I don't want to be distracted by no man when I'm eating chips. I'd rather have dip. Just get out of my way when I see the chips and dip.
It's good you have priorities, Grandma said.
Know thyself, Lula replied. Someone famous said that. I don't remember who.
I took Hamilton to Clockner, past the high school in Hamilton Township, and turned into Cantel's neighborhood. A woman was standing on Cantel's front porch. She took a startled step back when she saw the three of us emerge from Big Blue.
Guess she's never seen a 53 Buick before, Grandma said.
Yeah,
Lula said, hitching up her fuchsia and black animal print spandex pants.
I'm sure that's it.
I approached the porch and handed the woman my business card.
Stephanie Plum.
I remember you, the woman said. You had your picture in the paper when you burned the funeral home down.
It wasn't my fault.
It wasn't my fault either, Grandma said.
I'm Cindy Carroll's sister. I know she's been having a hard time, so I called her this morning, just checking in, you know. And as soon as I heard her, I knew something was wrong. She didn't want to talk on the phone, and she was real secretive. So I came over here. I only live 2 blocks away. She wouldn't answer her door when I knocked, so I ran around back, and that door was locked, too. And the shades are all drawn. You can't see into the house at all.
Maybe she just wants to be alone, Lula said. Maybe she thinks you're nosy.
Put your ear to the window, Cindy said.
Lula put her ear to the front window.
Listen real close. What do you hear?
Uh-oh, Lula said. I hear the crinkle of a chip bag. I hear crunching.
I'm afraid she's held up another truck, Cindy said. I didn't want to call the police, and I didn't want to call her ex-husband. He's a real jerk. If I'd been married to him, I'd be a little nutty, too. Anyway, I remembered Carol saying how nice you all were, so I thought maybe you could help.
I rapped on the front door. Carol? It's Stephanie Plum. Open the door.
Go away.
I need to talk to you.
I'm busy.
She's going to jail, Cindy wailed. She's a habitual offender. They're going to lock her up and throw away the key. She's a chip junkie. My sister's an addict.
We don't want to get carried away with this, Lula said. Last I looked, Fritos weren't on the list of controlled substances.
Maybe we should shoot the lock off the door, Grandma said.
Hey, Carol, I yelled through the door. Did you rob another Frito-Lay truck?
Don't worry, Cindy called out. We'll get you a good lawyer. Maybe you can plead insanity.
The door flew open, and Carol stood in the doorway holding a bag of cheese doodles. Her hair was smudged with orange doodle dust and stood out from her scalp like an explosion had gone off inside her head. Her mascara was smudged, her lipstick eaten off, replaced with orange doodle stain. She was dressed in a nightgown, sneakers, and a warm-up jacket. Doodle crumbs stuck to the jacket and sparkled in the morning sunlight.
Whoa, Lula said. It's Fright Night.
What is it with you people? Carol screeched. Don't you have lives? Go away. Can't you see I'm having breakfast?
What should we do? Cindy asked. Should we call 911?
Forget 911, Lula said. Call an exorcist.
What's the deal with the cheese doodles? I asked Carol.
I slipped. I fell off the wagon.
You didn't rob another truck, did you?
No.
A store?
Absolutely not. I paid for these. Okay, maybe a couple bags got stuck in my jacket, but I don't know how that happened. I don't have any memory of it, I swear.
You're a nut,
Lula said, prowling through the house, gathering up stashed bags of chips.
You got no self-control. You need Chips Anonymous.
Lula opened a bag of Doritos and scarfed a few. Grandma held out a grocery bag.
I found this in the kitchen. We can put the chips in it and take them with us so she isn't tempted to eat anymore.
Put the chips in the bag and give them to Cindy, I told Grandma.
I thought it might be a good idea if we took them, Grandma said.
Yeah, Lula said. That's a much better idea than making poor Cindy cart them off.
I wasn't great in the willpower department. Even as I was standing there, I could feel the cheese doodles calling my name. I didn't want a whole grocery bag of doodles and chips in the car with me. I didn't want to end up looking like Carol. Give all the chips to Cindy, I said. The chips should stay in the family. Grandma looked over at Carol.
Are you going to be okay if we give her all the chips? You aren't going to flip out, are you?
I'm okay now, Carol said. Actually, I feel kind of sick. I think I'm going to lie down for a while.
We filled the grocery bag with the remaining chips and left Carol standing at the door, the pallor of her skin looking slightly green under the orange doodle dust. Cindy drove off with the chips, and Grandma and Lula and I stuffed ourselves into the Buick.
Huh, Lula said, settling in. We could have taken a few bags with us.
I had my eye on that bag of barbecue chips, Grandma said. It's going to be hard for me to keep up my strength without some chips.
Uh-oh, Lula said. Look at this. A couple of bags of chips somehow got in my big old purse, just like what happened to Carol.
Chips are devilish like that, Grandma said.
Yeah, Lula said. Guess we should eat them so they don't go to waste.
How many bags do you have? I asked her.
Three. You want one?
I blew out a sigh, and Lula handed me a bag of Fritos. Not only was I going to eat them, I was secretly glad she snitched them.
Now what? Lula wanted to know. I'm not going to have to go back to the filing, am I?
Sally Sweet's next up, I said.
I'm in, Lula said.
Sally lived on the opposite side of town. By the time we got there, he'd be done with his morning bus run, and it'd be a good time to bring him in and get him rebonded. I called Morelli on the way over to get a report on Eddie Gazzara.
He's going to be okay, Morelli said. He'll probably get released from the hospital tomorrow.
Anything new going on?
There was another devil holdup last night. This time the firebomb worked and the store burned down.
Anyone hurt?
No. It was late at night and the store was empty. The night manager got out the back door. The word on the street is that the Comstock Street Slayers are bragging about the cop shooting.
I didn't realize we had Slayers in Trenton.
We've got everything in Trenton.
If you rounded up all the Slayers, I might be able to identify the Red Devil, I said to Morelli.
To the best of our knowledge, there are 28 active Slayers, and they're about as easy to round up as smoke, and probably the 28 figure is low.
Okay, suppose I rode around in their neighborhood looking for the guy.
Honey, even I don't ride around in that neighborhood.
I disconnected and turned onto Fenton Street. It was easy to find Sally's house. A big yellow school bus was parked at the curb. I pulled up behind the bus, and we all trooped out. Sally opened the door with the security chain still in place.
I've changed my mind, he said. I don't want to go.
You have to go, I told him. It's the law.
The law's bogus. I didn't do anything wrong. And now if I go with you, I'm going to have to pay more money, right? Vinny's going to have to write another bond, right?
Yeah.
I haven't got more money. And anyway, I'm not even the one who should have been arrested. They should have arrested that jerk, Marty Sklar. He's the one who started all this.
I felt my eyebrows shoot halfway up my forehead. Marty Sklar is the guy who made a pass at you?
Do you know him?
Sally asked. I went to school with him. He was a big macho football player, and he married Barbara Jean Biablocki, the pom-pom queen. It was a perfect match. They deserved each other. Sklar was a bully, and Barbara Jean thought she could walk on water because she grew perfect breasts. Last I heard, Sklar was working in his father-in-law's Toyota dealership, and Barbara Jean had porked up to biblical proportions. Was Sklar drunk?
Fucking A. Oh, crap.
Snap, snap.
You gotta remember about fudge, Grandma said.
Sally nodded.
Fudgin' A.
We all did a mental ew. Fudgin' A didn't sound tasty coming out of Sally's mouth.
Maybe fudge don't work for that one time, Grandma said.
If I could get Sklar to drop the charges against Sally, and we had a sympathetic judge, I could save Sally the expense of a second bond.
You're not going anywhere, I said to Sally. I don't need to bring you in today. I'll talk to Sklar and see what I can do about getting the charges dropped.
No shit,
snap.
You better clean up your mouth or you're gonna lose that hand,
Lula said to Sally.
You're gonna amputate yourself.
Fudge,
Sally said.
Grandma looked down at her watch.
You're gonna have to take me home now. I have a beauty parlor appointment this afternoon, and I don't want to be late. I got a lot of ground to cover today, what with the shooting and all.
This was a good deal for me, because the negotiation with Marty Sklar would go better without Grandma present. In fact, I preferred to do it without Lula, but I didn't think that was going to happen. I pointed the Buick toward the Berg and motored across town. I dropped Grandma off in front of my parents' house. My sister's car was still in the driveway.
They're planning the wedding, Grandma said. Ordinarily, I'd be right there, but it looks to me like this is going on for days. They spent 2 hours this morning talking about what kind of suit Mr. Cutie Uggams was going to wear. I don't know how your mother does it. That woman has the patience of a saint.
Who's Mr. Cutie Uggams? Lula wanted to know.
Albert Clown. He and Valerie are getting married.
That's scary, Lula said.
Melvin Byablokey's Toyota dealership took up half a block on South Broad Street. It wasn't the biggest or the best dealership in the state, but according to Berg gossip, it made enough money to send Melvin and his wife on a cruise every February and to give a job to his son-in-law. I parked in the area reserved for customers, and Lula and I went searching for Sklar.
This here's a butt-ugly showroom, Lula said. They should buy some new carpet, and what's with the nasty plastic chairs? For a minute there, I thought I was back at the office.
A guy in a sports coat ambled over, and it took me a moment to realize it was Marty Sklar. He was shorter than I remembered. His hair was balding. He was wearing glasses, and his six-pack stomach had turned to a keg. Marty wasn't aging well.
Stephanie Plum, Marty said. I remember you. Joe Morelli used to write poems on bathroom walls about you.
Yeah, I'm living with him now.
Sklar touched his index finger to my lip.
Then all those things he said must be true.
He'd caught me flat-footed. I wasn't expecting the touch. I slapped his hand away, but it was too late. I had Marty Sklar cooties on my lip. Yuck! I needed mouthwash, disinfectant. I was going to rush home and take a shower, maybe 2 showers.
Hey, Lula said, don't you touch her. Did she say you could touch her? I don't think so. I didn't hear her give you permission. You keep your nasty-ass hands to yourself.
Sklar cut his eyes to Lula.
Who the hell are you? I'm Lula. Who the hell are you?
I'm Marty Sklar.
Huh,
Lula said. I tried not to think about the lip cooties and pushed forward.
Here's the thing, Marty. I want to talk to you about Sally Sweet.
What about him?
I thought you might want to drop the charges. It turns out he's hired a really good lawyer, and the lawyer's found a bunch of witnesses who've officially stated you came on to Sweet.
He hit me with his guitar.
That's true, but I thought you might not want it to go public about the sex thing.
What sex thing?
The witnesses said you wanted to have sex with Sally.
That's a lie. I was just busting his balls.
It's not going to sound like that at the trial.
Trial?
Well, he's got this lawyer now and all the witnesses.
Shit.
I looked at my watch. If you move fast to make a phone call, you can stop the process before it gets out of control. Probably your father-in-law would be upset to learn that you propositioned a transvestite.
Yeah. Lula said, that's like a double cheat. You were going to cheat with a guy in a dress. Father-in-laws hate that.
What's the name of this hotshot lawyer? Sklar asked.
Albert Clown. And he's supposed to be good? I never heard of him.
He's a shark, I said. He's new to the area.
So what's your interest in this? Sklar asked me.
Just being a friend, Marty, since we went to school together and all.
And I left the showroom. Lula and I didn't say anything until we were out of the lot.
Girl, you can lie,
Lula yelled when I turned the Buick onto Broad.
You are the shit. I almost gave myself a hemorrhoid trying not to laugh back there. I can't believe how good you can lie. I mean, I've seen you lie before, but this was like Satan lying. It was inspired lying.
Chapter 4. I drove 2 blocks up Broad and pulled into a Subway shop.
This is a good place to eat lunch, Lula said. They got them low-carb sandwiches, and they got them low-fat sandwiches. You could lose a lot of weight eating here. The more you eat, the more you lose.
Actually, I chose Subway because it was next to Dunkin' Donuts.
Friggin' A, Lula said.
We each got a sub, and then we each got 6 donuts. We sat in the car and ate the sub and the donuts in silence. I crumpled my wrappers and shoved them into the donut bag. Do you know anything about the Slayers? I asked Lula.
I know the bad news. There's a whole bunch of gangs in Trenton. The Comstock Street Slayers and the Bad Killer Cuts are the 2 big ones. Used to be you only heard about the Slayers on the West Coast, but they're everywhere now. Kids join up in prison, and then they bring it back to the street. Comstock Street is gangland these days.
I talked to Morelli a while ago. He said the Slayers are bragging about shooting Eddie Gazzara.
Bummer. You better watch out on account of you disrespected Red Devil, and he was hanging with those guys. You don't want to get on the bad side of a Slayer. I'd be real careful of that if I was you.
You're the one who shot up the Devil guy's tire.
Yeah, but he didn't know it was me. He probably thought it was you. You're the big deal bounty hunter. I'm just a file clerk.
Speaking of file clerk, I should get you back to the office so you can do some filing.
Yeah, but who's going to watch out for your ass then? Who's going to help catch the bad guys?
You know what we should do?
We should go take a look around Comstock Street. Maybe we could get the Red Devil.
I don't want to get the Red Devil. He shoots at people. He's a police problem.
Boy, what's with you? Everything's a police problem these days.
I enforce bail bond requirements. That's the extent of my authority.
Well, we don't have to actually get him. We could just do some investigating. You know, like we could ride around in the neighborhood, maybe talk to a couple people. I bet we could find out who the devil guy is. You're the only one who knows what he looks like.
Lucky me. To begin with, I don't know where the devil guy lives, so it would be hard to ride around in his neighborhood. And if that isn't enough, even if we found his neighborhood and went asking questions, no one would talk to me.
Yeah, but they talk to me. Everyone talks to me. I got a winning personality, and I look like I belong in a gang-infested neighborhood.
Lula scrounged in her big black leather purse, found her cell phone, and punched in a number.
Hey, she said when the connection was made. It's Lula, and I need some information.
Pause.
Your ass, she said. I'm not doing that no more.
Another pause.
I'm not doing that either, and I'm especially not doing that last thing. That's disgusting. Are you going to listen to me or what?
There were about 3 more minutes of conversation, and Lula dropped her phone back into her bag.
Okay, I got some gang boundaries now. The Slayers are between 3rd and 8th Streets on Comstock, and Comstock's 1 block over from Stark, Lula said. I used to work part of that area. My corner was on Stark, but I got a lot of customers from the south side. It wasn't so bad back then. That was before the gangs moved in. I figured we'd just mosey on over there and take a look around.
I don't think that's a good idea.
How bad could it be? We're in a car. We're just driving through. It's not like we're in Baghdad or something. And anyway, the gangs aren't out during the day. They're like vampires. They only come out at night. So during the day, the streets are real safe.
That's not true.
Are you calling me a fibber?
Yeah.
Well, okay. Maybe they aren't real safe, but they're safe enough in a car. What could happen to you in a car?
Problem was, Lula and I were sort of the Abbott and Costello of law enforcement. Things happened to us all the time. Things that weren't normal.
Give me a break, Lula said. I don't want to go back and file. I'd rather ride through hell than file.
Okay, I said on a sigh. We'll do a drive-through. Abbott and Costello weren't all that bright. They were always doing stupid things like this. And more to the point, I felt guilty about Eddie Gazzara. I felt like he got shot because I'd acted impulsively. I felt like I owed him. Anyway, Lula was probably right. It was daytime. It was probably reasonably safe. I could do a simple ride through the Slayer's neighborhood, and maybe I'd get lucky. If I could find the Red Devil, the police might have a chance at getting the guy who shot Eddie. I cut through the center of the city and turned up Stark Street. Stark Street started out bad and got worse. The gang graffiti increased with each block. By the time we were at 3rd,
The buildings were solid slogans and signs. The sidewalks were spray-painted. The street signs were spray-painted. First-floor windows were laced with iron security bars, and the bars and pawn shops were behind partially closed security gates. I turned right at 3rd and drove one block to Comstock. Once off Stark, there were fewer businesses and the streets narrowed. Cars were parked on both sides of Comstock, reducing the road to barely 2 lanes. We passed a couple guys on a corner. They were young, dressed in baggy jeans and white t-shirts. Their arms and hands were tattooed. Their expressions were sullen and watchful.
"Not a lot of people out," Lula said, "except for the 2 sentries we just passed."
"It's the middle of the day. People are working."
"Not in this neighborhood," Lula said. "Most of these people don't got jobs, unless you count holding up liquor stores as a profession."
I checked my rearview mirror and saw one of the corner watchers put a cell phone to his ear. "I'm getting a bad feeling," I said.
"That's because you're a minority here."
"You mean being white?"
"No, I mean you're the only one for blocks not packing a gun."
I cruised past 5th and started looking for a way out. I didn't want to go deeper into the hood. I wanted to get back to Stark and head for City Center. I turned left onto 6th and realized the truck in front of me wasn't moving. It was double parked. No one at the wheel. I put the Buick into reverse and inched back. I was about to pull onto Comstock when a kid appeared from out of nowhere. He was in his late teens, and he looked like a clone of the guys on the corner. He approached the car and rapped on the driver's side window.
"Hey," he said. "You might want to ignore him," Lula said, "and it might not be a bad idea to back up a little faster."
"I'd like to back up faster, but there are a couple really nasty-looking guys at my bumper. If I back up, I'll run over them."
"So what's your point?"
"I know you,"
the kid at my window said, his face inches from the glass.
"You're a fucking bounty hunter. You busted my uncle. You were here with some Rambo guy. And you're the one fingered Red Devil."
The car started to rock, and I realized the guys in the back were on the bumper. More faces pressed against the side windows.
"Step on the freaking gas," Lula said. "It don't matter if you run these clowns over. They've been run over lots of times. Look at them. Don't they look like they've been run over?"
"The guy at your window is saying something. What's he saying?"
"How would I know?" Lula said. "It's gangster talk shit. Something about kill the bitches. And now he's licking the glass. You're gonna have to Clorox his car if we ever get out of here."
"All right. I have 3 options. I can call Joe and have him send the police. That would be really embarrassing, and they might not get here in time to stop the bitch killing. The second choice is that I call Ranger. Equally embarrassing. And there might be bloodshed. Not mine, probably. Or I could run over a couple of these fine, upstanding young men."
"I'm getting real nervous about this," Lula said. "I think you might have made a bad decision to come into this neighborhood."
I felt my blood pressure edge up a notch.
"This was your idea." "Well, it was a bad idea. I'm willing to admit that now."
The Buick bounced around a little, and I could hear scraping, thumping sounds overhead. The idiots were jumping up and down on the roof.
"Your grandma's not going to like it one bit if they scratch her car," Lula said. "This is a classic."
"Hey," I yelled to the guy with his face pressed against my window. "Back off from the car. It's a classic."
"Classic this, bitch," he said,
and he pulled a gun out of his baggy pants and aimed it at me, the barrel about 1 inch from the window glass.
"Holy shit," Lula said,
eyes the size of duck eggs.
"Get me the fudge out of here."
Option number 3, I thought, and I mashed the accelerator down to the floorboard. The car sucked gas and roared back like a freight train. I didn't feel any bumps under the tires indicating that I'd run over a body. I took that as a good sign. I wheeled backward onto Comstock and screeched to a stop to change gears. 3 guys flew off my roof. 2 bounced off the right front fender onto the road, and 1 smacked onto the hood and grabbed hold of a windshield wiper.
"Don't stop now," Lula yelled, "and don't worry about the hood ornament. You'll lose him on the next turn."
I rammed the car into drive and took off. I could hear a lot of noise behind me, a lunatic mix of yelling and gunfire and laughter. The guy on the hood stared in at me, the pupils of his eyes dilated to the size of nickels.
"Think he got a pharmaceutical problem going," Lula said.
I leaned on the horn, but the hood rider didn't blink.
"This here's like having an insect stuck on your windshield," Lula said. "A big, ugly, drugged-out praying mantis."
I hauled the Buick around in a looping left turn onto 7th, and the insect silently sailed off into space and crashed into a rusted-out van that was parked at the curb. I resumed breathing when I got to Stark.
See? That worked out okay, Lula said. Too bad we didn't find a devil guy, though.
I gave her a sideways glance. Maybe you want to go back tomorrow and try again?
Maybe not tomorrow.
I called Connie and told her we were on our way back to the office and asked her to run a search for me. If I give you some street boundaries, can you check our files for guys in that neighborhood? I asked her.
I can search by zip code and I can search by street. As long as the area isn't too big, I can do the by street search.
I felt a responsibility to Eddie, and I thought chances were decent that the devil guy had a record. I'd declined to go through mugshots at police headquarters. I'd done that drill for other crimes and found it to be spectacularly unhelpful. After looking at 100 headshots, I tended to forget the face of the perp. A search by neighborhood would produce a much smaller pool of potentials. Connie was pulling files when Lula and I swung through the front door.
I got 17 hits for the boundaries you gave me, she said. None are outstanding. It's not really our neighborhood.
Lula looked through the pile of files on Connie's desk.
Hey, this is a guy who was stuck to the hood of your car, Lula said, holding a photo for me to see.
Connie grabbed a file and closed the drawer with her foot.
That's Eugene Brown. He's been arrested so many times, we have a personal relationship. Never been convicted of anything but possession.
Looks like we bonded him out for armed robbery and vehicular manslaughter, Lula said.
Eyewitnesses have a way of disappearing when Eugene's involved, Connie said. And there's a lot of sworn testimony recanting. What was he doing on the hood of your car?
We were sort of cruising up Comstock Street, Lula said.
Connie's eyes got wide.
Where on Comstock?
3rd.
Do you have a death wish? That's Slayer land.
We were just riding through, Lula said.
The two of you? In what car? The Buick? The powder blue and white Buick? You can't go past 3rd on Comstock in a powder blue car. That's Cut's colors. You don't go into gang territory with another gang color.
Well, yeah, but I didn't think it counted for cars. I just thought it counted for clothes, for like do-rags and shirts and shit, Lula said. And it's hard to believe anybody'd take Cuts serious with a color like powder blue. Powder blue is a sissy color.
I took the files from Lula and shuffled through them. No devil guy. Connie handed me the remaining 4 files. No devil guy there, either. This left me with 3 possibilities. The devil guy didn't have a record. Or the devil guy used a different bond agent. Les Sebring, maybe. Or the devil guy gave an address outside of Slayerland. I saw Connie and Lula go still and fix their eyes on the door behind me. Either someone walked in with a gun in his hand, or else Ranger was here. Since no one ducked for cover, I was betting it was Ranger. A warm hand settled at the base of my neck, and I felt Ranger lean into me.
Babe,
he said softly, his right arm snaking around me to take the file from my hand.
Eugene Brown, he read. You might not want to spend a lot of time with Eugene. He's not a fun guy.
I sort of bounced him off the hood of the Buick today, I told Ranger, but it wasn't my fault. Ranger tightened his hold on my neck.
You want to be careful with Eugene. He hasn't got much of a sense of humor, babe.
I don't suppose you know the identity of the devil guy who's robbing all the deli marts?
Don't suppose I do, Ranger said, but it's not Eugene. There'd be more bodies on the floor if it was Eugene.
Vinny's inner office door opened and Vinny stuck his head out.
What's up?
I'm going out of town for a couple weeks, Ranger said. Tank will be on the job if you need him.
Ranger dropped the brown file on Connie's desk and turned to me.
I want to talk to you outside.
It was late afternoon and the sky was overcast, but the autumn air was still warm in spite of the gloom. Ranger's customized black Ford F-150 FX4 was parked curbside. A black SUV with tinted windows was parked behind the truck. The SUV had its motor running. I followed Ranger out of the office, glancing first at the SUV and then at the heavy traffic on Hamilton. Rush hour in Trenton.
What if I need something?
I asked Ranger, doing a little flirting, feeling brave because I was on a public street.
Should I call Tank?
He ran a fingertip along my hairline and tucked a stray curl behind my ear.
It depends what you need. Did you have anything special in mind?
Our eyes held, and I felt the first licks of panic. I should know better than to play with Ranger. He never got rattled, and he never backed down. I, on the other hand, frequently got rattled with Ranger and almost always backed down. How about if I need a car? I asked, searching for something legitimate to change the tone. There'd been times past when I'd needed a car, and Ranger had provided one. Ranger pulled a set of keys from his pocket and dropped them into my hand.
You can take my truck. I can get a ride back with Tank.
A narrow alley separated Vinny's office from the neighboring business. Ranger nudged me into the shadow of the alley, pressed me against the brick wall, and kissed me. When his tongue touched mine, my fingers curled into his shirt, and I think I might have momentarily lost consciousness. Hey, I said when consciousness returned. You're poaching.
And?
Stop it.
You don't mean that,
Ranger said, smiling. He was right. A woman would have to be dead not to want to kiss Ranger, and I wasn't even close to dead. I gave the keys back to him. Nice gesture, but I can't take the truck.
Call Tank if you change your mind, and be careful. Don't try to play with Eugene.
And he was gone. Lula and Connie were shuffling papers, trying to look busy when I returned to the office.
Is he gone? Lula wanted to know.
Yeah.
Lord, he makes me nervous. He is so hot. I got flashes. Look at me. I'm having a flash. I'm not even in menopause, and I'm hot flashing.
Connie rolled back in her chair.
Did he tell you where he was going? How long he'd be away?
No. Connie had a problem. When Ranger was gone, she was left with me and a couple part-time BEAs. If a high-stakes bond went south, she'd be in a bind. The case would have to go to me. At least temporarily. I was okay at my job, but I wasn't Ranger. Ranger had skills that went way beyond the normal parameters of human ability.
I hate when he does this, Connie said.
I've been noticing the last two times he took off there was a coup in Central America, Lula said. I'm going home and I'm watching CNN.
I left the office and headed home to Joe's house. Somehow I'd managed to keep busy all day, but it didn't feel like I'd accomplished much. I stopped at Joe Vicini's deli on Hamilton and picked up some lunch meat, sliced provolone, a medium container of potato salad, and a loaf of bread. I added a couple tomatoes and a small tub of chocolate ice cream. It was a bad time to stop at Joe Vicini's, but it was my only option if I wanted to eat. St. Francis Hospital was a block away, and half the hospital emptied out into Joe Vicini's at this hour. Mrs. Wexler came up to me while I was standing in line.
My goodness, she said. I haven't seen you in an age. I understand your sister is getting married. Isn't that nice for her? But it must be a very stressful time for you. Is that a cold sore on your lip, dear?
My hand immediately flew to my lip. I didn't have anything on my lip when I left the house this morning, but yes, there was definitely something erupting on my mouth. I dug in my purse for a mirror. I've never had a cold sore, I told Mrs. Wexler. I swear to God.
Well, it does look like a cold sore, Mrs. Wexler said.
I squinted into my mirror. Yikes! There it was, big and red and angry looking. How did this happen? And then it hit me. Marty Sklar and his cooties. I studied my lip. No. Wait a minute. It wasn't a cold sore. It was a boo-boo. I'd gnawed a hole into my lip on the way across town worrying about Eugene Brown and God knows what else. Okay. And the fact that I was attracted to two men didn't help. Probably I loved both of them. How sick is that?
It's a cut, I said to Mrs. Wexler. I got it this afternoon.
Of course, Mrs. Wexler said. I can see that now.
My mother called on my cell phone.
Mrs. Rogers just called, my mother said. She said you're in Joe Vicini's and you have a cold sore.
It's not a cold sore, it's a cut.
Well, that's a relief.
Could you pick up a couple things for me while you're there at Giovacchini's? I need a pound of olive loaf, an Entenmann's raspberry swirl coffee cake, and a quarter pound of Swiss. Make sure they don't slice the Swiss too thin. It all sticks together if it's too thin.
I scurried off to the deli counter, got my mother's stuff, and got back into line.
Leslie Giovacchini was working the register.
Gosh, she said when I stepped in front of her. You poor thing, you've got a big herpes.
It's not a herpes, I said. It's a cut. I got it this afternoon.
You should put ice on it, she said. It looks real painful.
I paid Leslie and slunk out of the store. I hunched behind the wheel of the Buick and turned into the Berg. I had to park in the driveway when I got to my parents' house because there was a big yellow school bus at the curb. Grandma was at the door waiting for me.
Guess who's here, she said.
Sally?
He came over because he was so excited that the charges were dropped, and he's been real helpful on account of Valerie still here, and we've been discussing the bridesmaids' dresses. Valerie wants pink, but Sally thinks they should be a fall color, since it's fall.
Valerie was in the kitchen sitting at the table with the baby hanging from her neck in a kind of sling apparatus. My mother was at the stove stirring a pot of marinara. Sally was sitting across from Valerie. His long, black, curly hair was Medusa meets Howard Stern. He was wearing a Motley Crue t-shirt, jeans with the knees torn out, and red lizard cowboy boots.
Hey, man, thanks for getting the charges dropped, Sally said. I got a call from the court, and then Sklar called me just to make sure I wasn't going to go ahead with the lawyer. I didn't know what to say at first, but I just went with it. It was real good.
I put the cheese and lunch meat in the fridge, and I set the coffee cake on the table. Glad it worked out.
So what do you think of the dresses?
Valerie wanted to know. Are you sure you want to have a big wedding? I asked Valerie. It seems like a lot of work and expense. And who will you have for bridesmaids?
You'll be my maid of honor. And then there's Loretta Stonehauser and Rita Metzger and Margaret Dursky as bridesmaids. And the girls can be junior bridesmaids.
I'm thinking pumpkin would be a good color for the bridesmaids' gowns, Sally said.
I cut myself a large wedge of coffee cake. It was going to take a lot of cake to improve my mood on the pumpkin gown.
You know what we need, Grandma said. We need a wedding planner, like that movie, remember? Where Jennifer Lopez is the wedding planner?
I could use help, Valerie said. It's hard to find the time for everything, but I don't think I can afford a wedding planner.
Maybe I could help plan the wedding, Sally said. I have extra time between my bus runs.
You'd be a perfect wedding planner, Grandma said. You have a real eye for color, and you got ideas about all that seasonal stuff. I would never have thought to have pumpkin gowns.
It's settled, then. You're the wedding planner, Valerie said.
My mother's attention wandered to the pantry. She might have been taking a mental inventory, but more likely she was contemplating the whiskey bottle hidden behind the olive oil.
How's the house search going? I asked Valerie. Any luck?
I haven't had a lot of time to put to it, she said, but I promised to start looking.
I sort of miss my apartment.
I know, Val said. I'm really sorry this is taking so long. Maybe we should move back here with Mom and Dad.
My mother's back went rigid at the stove. First the wedding planner, and now this. I cut another piece of cake and headed out.
I have to go. Joe's waiting.
Joe and Bob were on the couch watching television. I dropped my purse on the small hall table and took the grocery bag into the kitchen. I made sandwiches and spooned out the potato salad. I'm thinking about getting a cookbook, I told Morelli when I handed him his plate.
Wow, he said. What's that all about?
I'm getting tired of sandwiches and pizza.
A cookbook sounds like a big commitment.
It's not a commitment, I said. It's a stupid cookbook. I could learn how to cook a chicken or a cow or something.
Would we have to get married?
No. Jeez. Bob finished his sandwich and looked first to me and then to Morelli. He knew from past experience that it wasn't likely we'd share, so he put his head down on his paw and went back to watching Seinfeld.
So, I said, did you hear about Eugene Brown?
What about him?
I bounced him off my car today.
Morelli took a forkful of potato salad.
Am I going to hate the rest of this story?
It's possible. It was sort of a hit and run.
So this falls under the category of making an official police report?
Unofficial police report.
Did you kill him?
I don't think so. He was latched onto the hood of the Buick hanging onto the windshield wiper, and he got pitched off when I turned the corner. I was at 7th and Comstock, and I didn't think it was a good idea to get out of the car to check his vital signs. Morelli collected the three plates and stood to take them to the kitchen.
Dessert?
Chocolate ice cream. I followed after him and watched while he scooped. That was too easy, I said. You didn't yell or tell me I was stupid or anything.
I'm pacing myself.
I rolled out of bed with Morelli at the crack of dawn.
This is getting scary,
Morelli said.
First you're thinking about buying a cookbook, and now you're getting up with me. Next thing you'll be inviting my grandmother over for dinner.
Not likely. His grandma Bella was nuts. She had this Italian voodoo thing going that she called the eye. I'm not saying the eye worked, but I've known people who got the eye to coincidentally lose their hair or skip their period or break out in an unexplained rash. I was half Italian, but none of my relatives could give the eye. Mostly my relatives gave the finger. We showered together, and that involved some fooling around, so before Morelli even had breakfast, he was already a half hour late. I had coffee going by the time he came downstairs. He chugged a cup while he did the gun and badge routine. He dropped a blueberry into Rex's cage, and he dumped two cups of dog crunchies into Bob's bowl.
"What's the reason for the early start?" he asked. "You aren't going back to Comstock Street, are you?"
"I'm checking out real estate. Valerie isn't doing anything about finding her own place, so I thought I'd do some searching for her." Morelli looked over his cup at me.
"I thought you were all settled in here. What about the cookbook?"
"I like living with you, but sometimes I miss my independence."
"Like when?"
"Okay, maybe independence is the wrong word. Maybe I just miss my own bathroom." Morelli grabbed me and kissed me.
"I love you, but not enough to add a second bathroom. I'm not budgeted for any more renovations."
He set his cup on the counter and headed for the front of the house. Bob ran with him, woofing, jumping around like a rabbit. "Bob needs to go out," I said.
"Your turn," Morelli said. "I'm late. And besides, you owe me for the shower."
"What? What do you mean I owe you for the shower?" He shrugged into a jacket.
"I did your favorite thing today. Almost drowned doing it, too. And I think I got a bruise on my knee."
"Excuse me? What about that thing I did for you last night? I was just getting payback this morning." Morelli was grinning.
"They're not nearly equal, Cupcake, especially since I did it in the shower."
He took his keys off the hall table.
"Come on, be a sport. I'm really late."
"Fine, go. I'll walk the dog. Yeesh." Morelli opened the front door and stopped.
"Shit."
"What?"
"We had visitors last night."
Chapter 5. I tightened my robe and peeked around Morelli. There was graffiti on the sidewalk and graffiti on the Buick. We both stepped out onto the small porch. The graffiti was on the front door. "What are these marks?" I asked. "They look like little kitty paws."
"These are gang symbols. The Comstock Street Slayers are affiliated with Crud and Guts. Sometimes Crud and Guts is known as Cat Guts. So you have CSS with a paw print."
Morelli was pointing as he was talking.
"The GKC on the door would stand for Gangsta Killer Cruds."
I moved off the porch over to the Buick. Every square inch of the car was spray-painted. Slay the Bitch and Crud Money were prevalent themes. Morelli's SUV had been left untouched. "Seems like there's a message here," I said to Morelli. I wasn't all that fond of the Buick, but I hated seeing it defaced. The Buick had from time to time saved my butt. And probably this is a weird thing to say, but sometimes I had the feeling there was more there than just a car. Not to mention, the slogans seemed directed at me, and I suspected they weren't indicators of affection.
"Slay the Bitch is self-explanatory," Morelli said.
His no-expression cop face was in place, with only the tight corners of his mouth giving him away. Morelli wasn't happy.
"Crud Money describes the gangster lifestyle of extortion and drug sales. In this case, it could be putting you on notice that you're marked for retribution.
What does that mean, retribution? Morelli turned to me, and our eyes held.
Could be anything, he said. Could be death.
A greasy wave of undefined emotion slid through me. I suspected fear was heavy in the mix. I didn't know a lot about gangs, but I was coming up to speed fast. I hadn't felt especially threatened by gang-related crime 3 days ago. Now it was sitting at my curb, and it didn't feel good. You're exaggerating, right? I asked.
Executions are a part of gang culture. Gangs have been steadily on the rise in Trenton, and the murder rate has been rising with them. It used to be that the gangs were small and composed of kids looking to have a local identity. Now the gangs have their roots in the prison system and have national affiliations. They control the drug sales and territories. They're violent. They're unpredictable. They're feared in their communities.
I knew there was a problem. I didn't know it was that bad.
It's not something we like to talk about since we're at a loss how to fix it.
Morelli pushed me into the house and closed the door.
I want you to stay here today until I get some intel on this. I'm going to have the Buick picked up and impounded in the police garage so someone from the street gang's task force can take a look at it.
You can't take the Buick. How will I get to work? Morelli tapped me gently on the forehead with his index finger.
Anybody home in there? Look at that car. Do you want to drive that car around?
I've driven around him worse. And that was the honest-to-God sad truth. How pathetic is that?
Humor me, okay? Stay in the house. You should be safe here. To my knowledge, the Slayers have never burned down a house.
Just a deli, I said.
Yeah, a deli.
We both thought about that for a moment. Morelli took my car keys from my purse and left. I locked the front door and went to the living room window to watch Morelli pull away in his SUV. How are we going to go for a walk? I asked Bob. How am I going to do my job? What will I do all day? Bob was pacing in front of the door, looking desperate. You're going to have to do it in the backyard today, I said, not all that unhappy about missing the walk. Bob pooped everywhere in the morning, and I got the privilege of carting it home. It's hard to enjoy a walk when you've got a big bag of poop in your hand. I hooked Bob up to his backyard leash and tidied the kitchen. By 1 o'clock, the bed was made, the floors were clean, the toaster was polished, the laundry was washed, dried, and folded, and I was cleaning out the fridge. At some point when my back was turned, the Buick disappeared from the curb. Now what? I said to Bob. Bob looked thoughtful, but he didn't come up with anything, so I called Morelli. Now what? I said to Morelli.
It's only 1 o'clock, he said. Give me a break. We're working on it.
I polished the toaster.
Uh-huh. Listen, I have to go now.
I'm going nuts here. There was a disconnect, and then a dial tone. I still had the phone in my hand when it rang.
What's going on? Connie wanted to know. Are you sick? You always check in at the office by now.
I have a car problem.
And? You want me to send Lula?
Sure. Send Lula. 10 minutes later, Lula's red Firebird was idling in front of Morelli's house.
Looks like Morelli got his house decorated, Lula said.
It appears Eugene Brown didn't enjoy getting flipped off my hood.
I didn't get none of this gang crap on my house, so it looks like you're the only one he's holding a grudge against. I guess that's on account of I was just an innocent passenger.
I gave Lula the squinty-eyed death glare.
Don't you look at me like that, Lula said. You should be happy for me that I'm not involved in this. Anyways, Vinny's not happy either. He said there's just 5 days left to get Roger Banker's ass hauled into court or he's going to be out the bond.
If I had a quarter for every time I tried to snag Roger Banker, I could go to Bermuda for a week. Banker was as slippery as they come. He was a repeat offender, so he knew the drill. I couldn't feed him a load of baloney about just going down to the court to reschedule. He knew once the cuffs were on him, he was going to jail. He was unemployed, living off an indeterminate number of loser girlfriends and loser relatives, and he was hard to spot. Banker had no memorable features. Banker was like the invisible man. I once stood next to him at a bar and didn't recognize him. Lula and I had been collecting photographs of him and committing the photographs to memory with hopes that would help.
Okay,
I said. Let's make the rounds. Maybe we'll get lucky. The rounds consisted of LaWanda Jones, Beverly Barber, Shermaine Williamson, and Marjorie Best. There were other people and places to include in the banker hunt, but LaWanda, Beverly, Shermaine, and Marjorie were my top picks. They all lived in the projects just north of the police station. LaWanda and Beverly were sisters. They lived four blocks apart, and they were a car crash. Lula cruised into the projects.
Who's first up? Lula asked.
LaWanda. The projects covered a large chunk of Trenton real estate that was less than prime. A lot less than prime. The buildings were red brick, government-issue low-rise. The fencing was industrial chain link. The cars at the curb were junkers.
Good thing for the gang graffiti, this would be real drab, Lula said. Wouldn't you think they could grow grass? Hell, plant a bush.
I suspected even God would have a hard time landscaping the projects. The ground was as hard and as blighted as the lives of the people who lived here. Lula turned onto Kendall Street and parked two doors down from LaWanda's garden apartment, the term garden being used loosely. We'd been here before, so we knew the layout. It was a ground floor unit with one bedroom and seven dogs. The dogs were of varying sizes and ages, all of indeterminate breed, all of them horny buggers willing to hump anything that moved. We got out of the car cautiously, on the lookout for the pack of beasts.
I don't see any of LaWanda's dogs, Lula said.
Maybe they're locked up in the house.
Well, I'm not going in if they're in the house. I hate those dogs, nasty-ass humpers. What's she thinking anyway to keep a pack of pervert dogs like that?
We knocked once. No answer.
I know she's in there, Lula said. I can hear her talking, doing business.
LaWanda did phone sex. She didn't look like she was rolling in money, so I was guessing she wasn't all that good at the job. Or maybe she just spent her money on beer, cigarettes, and chicken nuggets. LaWanda ate a lot of chicken nuggets. LaWanda ate chicken nuggets like Carol Cantell ate cheese doodles. I knocked again and tried the doorknob. The door wasn't locked. I held the door open a crack, and Lula and I peeked in. No dogs in sight.
Not likely bank is in here, Lula said, following me through the front door. The door would be locked up. And anyway, jail would look good compared to this pig pen.
We stepped over a suspicious stain on the rug and stared into the jumbled mess that passed for LaWanda's home. There was a mattress on the floor in the far corner of the living room. The mattress was covered with a tattered yellow chenille spread. An open, empty pizza delivery box was on the floor by the mattress. Clothes and shoes were scattered everywhere. A couple rickety folding chairs had been set up in the living room. The backs of the chairs said, Morton's Funeral Parlor. A big brown leather recliner had been placed in front of the television. The recliner had a gash in one arm and in the seat, and some of the stuffing was spilling out. LaWanda was in the recliner with her back to us, a phone to her ear and a bucket of chicken nuggets balanced on the roll of fat that circled her waist. She was wearing gray sweats decorated with ketchup stains.
Yeah, honey, she said into the phone. That's good, baby. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I just got myself all naked for you, and I got love oil on myself because I'm gonna get hot.
Hey, Lula said. LaWanda, you paying attention here?
LaWanda jumped in her seat and whipped around to look at us.
What the hell? She said. What are you doing scaring me like that when I'm trying to earn an honest living?
She returned to the phone.
Excuse me, sugar. LaWanda's got a small problem. Could you just work on yourself some? I'll be right back.
She covered the phone with her hand and got up, some of the chair stuffing sticking to her double-wide ass.
What?
We're looking for Roger Banker, Lula said.
Well, he isn't here. Does it look like he's here?
Maybe he's hiding in the other room, Lula said.
You got a search warrant?
We don't need a search warrant, Lula said. We're bounty hunters.
Whatever,
LaWanda said.
Just do your search and get out. I gotta get back to my collar. Soon as you stop talking to Mr. Stiffy, he turns into Mr. Softy, and I get paid by the job. I do a volume business here.
Lula moved through the house while I stayed with LaWanda. I'm willing to pay for information, I told LaWanda. Do you have any information?
How much you paying?
Depends on the information, I said.
I got an address. I know where he's at if you hurry over there.
She handed the phone over to me.
You talk to this guy and I'll write down the address.
Wait a minute. Hello? Mr. Stiffy said. Who's this? None of your business.
I like that, he said. Spunky. I bet you'd like to spank me.
Wait a minute. I know your voice. Vinny? Stephanie? Christ. Disconnect.
LaWanda came back with the paper.
Here it is,
she said.
This is where he's staying.
I looked at the paper. This is your sister's address.
And? What happened to my collar?
He hung up. He was done.
Lula returned to the living room.
LaWanda, she said, you better do something about your kitchen. You got a cockroach as big as a cow in there.
I gave LaWanda 20.
This is it? This is all I get?
LaWanda said. If bankers at Beverly's house, I'll be back with the rest of the money.
Where's the dogs? Lula wanted to know.
Out,
LaWanda said.
They like to go out when the weather's nice.
Lula opened LaWanda's door and looked around.
How far out do they go?
How the hell do I know? They go out, and they stay out all day. Out is out.
Just asking, Lula said. No need to get touchy. You don't exactly have the best man of dogs, LaWanda.
LaWanda had her hands on her hips, lower lip stuck out, eyes narrowed.
You dissing on my dogs?
Yeah, Lula said. I hate your dogs. Your dogs are rude. Those dogs hump everything.
Wasn't so long ago people were saying that about you,
LaWanda said.
You got some nerve coming around here asking for information and then dissing my dogs. I got a mind to never give you no more information.
I grabbed Lula before she removed LaWanda's eyes from her eye sockets, and I shoved Lula out the door.
Don't provoke her, I said to Lula. She's probably got guns.
I got a gun, Lula said, and I got a mind to use it.
No guns, and get moving. I don't like standing out here in the open where the dogs can find us.
I think she insulted me, Lula said. I'm not ashamed of my past. I was a damn good hoe, but I didn't like the tone of her voice just now. It was an insulting tone.
I don't care what tone she had. Move your butt to the car before the dogs get us.
What's with you and the dogs? Here I'd just been insulted, and all you can think about is the dogs.
Do you want to be standing here when those dogs come running around the corner of the building?
I could take care of those dogs if I had to. It's not like I'm afraid of those dogs.
Well, I'm afraid of those dogs, so haul ass. And that was when we heard them, yipping, yipping, yipping in the distance, on the move, getting closer, somewhere out of sight, to the side of the building.
Oh, shit, Lula said.
And Lula started running for the car, knees up, arms pumping. I was two steps in front of her, running for all I was worth. I could hear the dogs round the corner. I turned to look, and I saw them galloping after us, eyes wild, mouths open, tongues and ears catching wind. They were closing ground fast, the biggest of them in the lead. Lula let out a shriek,
Lord help me!
I guess the Lord was listening, because they ran past Lula and took me down. The first dog hit me square in the back, sending me to my knees, not a good position to be in when you're attacked by a pack of humpers. I tried to regain my footing, but the dogs were on me, and I couldn't get up. I had humpers on both legs, and a bulldog that looked like Winston Churchill humping my head. There was a humper on a humper.
Keep going! Save yourself! I yelled to Lula. Tell my mother I love her!
Get up! Lula yelled at me. You gotta get up! Those dogs will hump you to death!
She was right. The pack was vicious. It was in a humping frenzy. Dogs in inferior humping positions were snarling and nipping, jockeying for better locations. The leg humpers held tight, grimly determined to finish the job, but the head humper kept losing his grip. The head humper was drooling and panting hot dog breath in my face. He'd hump some and slide off, and then he'd come scrambling back, trying to hump again.
I can't get up, I said. I've got 7 humping dogs on me. 7! Do something!
Lula was running around, hands in the air.
I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do.
Get the dog off my head, I yelled. I don't care about the leg humpers. Just get the dog off my head.
Maybe you should let them have their way with you, Lula said. They'll go away as soon as they're done. That's the way it is with male humping.
Maybe you should goddamn grab this horny humping bulldog and get him the hell off my freaking head.
The door to LaWanda's apartment crashed open, and LaWanda yelled out to us.
Hey, she said, What are you doing to my dogs?
We ain't doing nothing, Lula said. They're humping Stephanie.
LaWanda had a bag of dog kibble in her hand. She shook the bag, and the dogs stopped humping and looked around. LaWanda shook the bag some more, and the dogs gave a couple last half-hearted humps and took off for the kibble.
Dumbass bounty hunters, LaWanda said,
disappearing into the house with the dogs, slamming and locking the door behind her.
I thought you were a goner, Lula said to me.
I was on my back, breathing heavy, eyes closed.
Give me a minute.
You're a mess, Lula said. Those dogs humped all over you, and you got something in your hair from